It's not too much hype. It's not too much pomp and circumstance. It's not too much energy or effort or attention being paid to the series this weekend. It's not.
Yeah.
Everything this series is billed as, it is. This is a new Barn Baseball show. He's Lindsay. I'm Brad. Number four against number two.
I mean,
in the RPI, it's number two against number five.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to break records with the attendance this weekend. Let me tell you something.
Yeah.
Tuesday at 4 p.m. and 49 degrees against a top five non-conference team felt like a super regional. What do you think 6:05 on a Friday night or a Saturday night against a top five SEC opponent in your first home weekend in conference play this year with a team that's won 11 straight games?
Yeah.
What do you think that's going to feel like or sound like? I can't wait.
It's going to be huge. The fact that they're pulling out all the stops, they're doing the block party on Saturday, you know, doing a lot of new things. And that's kind of been one of the themes off the field for Auburn baseball, is doing, you know, promotions, making the games more of an event. Mm-hmm. And I think you combine that with just, like you said, the stakes of the matchup.
Yeah.
I know that like basketball has gone to the Final Four and stuff, but I feel like regular season wise, this probably is the biggest by rankings matchup that's been played at Auburn in like not just baseball, all sports for a long time. I'm trying to think about like other really big matchups at home for Auburn. I know Auburn football's obviously had some highly rated matchups, but like,
yeah, the 13 Iron Bowl, I think, was 1-4 at the time.
And it's your biggest rival. So that's right. Clearly above this, especially given the timing.
I think we played some basketball games against maybe Tennessee or Florida, where both teams were pretty highly ranked. Mm-hmm. You had Alabama last year in basketball. That was the home game when Auburn was one. And you had the 1-2 at their place. But, yeah, that's a good question. Is this the highest ranked? Where does this fall among highest ranked matchups, period? Good question.
Yeah, it's funny because you set a record for highest rated matchup in Plainsman Park history on Tuesday with Georgia Tech, number 4-3. And now you're beating that record on Friday. Can we, I guess, real quick, Texas Auburn is the focus here, but I do want to talk real quick about Georgia Tech simply because I don't think I saw a 9-2 victory coming when Sonny and I sat down on Tuesday morning to talk about it. I knew they had a good game plan. I knew that our pitching in the midweek has been very good. Andres Alvarez is not your typical midweek starter. I don't think I saw 3 hits and 2 runs for Georgia Tech. I think that's the biggest surprise. Not just that you won, it's the way that you did it.
Yeah, 100% right. Dre now over his last 9 appearances, going back to last year, SECs, regional, super regional, and then 5 starts this year. 40 2/3 innings, 3 earned runs. That'll play.
That's not bad.
That'll play.
That's not bad at all. My goodness.
First inning, it's like how Glavin with the Braves used to like struggle through the first, but it was, if you don't get him in the first, you ain't getting him.
Yeah.
And Dre has been that way. Now, one game, I think it was the second inning after he mowed through the first, but if you don't get him in that early inning, he's going to set it on cruise control, and then he's just going to ride. And he was unbelievable. My other takeaway from that game, Lindsay, was Chris Rembert's home run because of what it represented. He was able to put the full like explosiveness on that front foot and come off of it to drive the ball through and out over the wall. That's an awesome thing for this team moving forward with conference play.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen him go 1-3. We've seen him open it up on the base paths. But I think that was kind of the thing that I was waiting and hoping you would see this year was him be able to get into a ball, turn on a ball, send it a long way, but just adding that element to his game. He was never a big home run guy his freshman year. A lot of freshmen aren't. And that sorry, that fifth inning specifically, where you come in and, you know, you just open it up, you score five runs on Georgia Tech and really kind of put the game away.
Mm-hmm.
The way that they do it with like walk, single, single, and then after a strikeout, it's like another walk, scores a run, hit by, like, it felt like it was a snowball rolling downhill.
Yeah.
And very, very quickly, Georgia Tech just could not find a way to stop it.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's maybe the thing that early in the season, Auburn was still winning games, but that was kind of the thing you were missing, was the big crooked inning and the ability to go from, we're going to get one to we're going to get three here, we're going to get four here, and kind of get that kill shot. And it's good to see, even when you play really good teams like Georgia Tech, not only can you do it, you can prevent them from doing it, which is huge.
We've seen them win in different ways now over the last 3 weeks, you know, since last they gave up four runs or more in a game. Mm-hmm. And we've seen them do it with early offense. So they've had the big runs in the first and the second, and then that's it. I mean, you don't get up from under the thumb from there.
Yeah.
And now we've seen them do it over the last four games, well, three of the last four, the first two against Missouri and then against Georgia Tech, where the offense is like a frying pan. It's not hot at the beginning, but man, at the end, it's cooking. And you get a late big number to salt the game away. Mm-hmm. So I like the fact that they've won games these different ways over the last 3 weeks: Nebraska, Winthrop, Missouri, Georgia Tech. Now, can they jump on these Texas pitchers? Or is it another one of those where you're waiting on the pan to heat up and somebody's got to get the late, a la game one against Missouri last week?
I do think one of the ways that Texas does, or sorry, that, like one of the things about Auburn and the ability of them to do that late is they're getting starters out of the game early. And I guess what my concern about is like, can you do that against these Texas starters? Because these guys are, objectively, this is the best rotation you faced all year. And you look at, you know, Dylan Volantis is going, he's on game three, he's going almost six innings to start. You know, Ruger Rojas, who you face tonight, he's clearing, he's averaging more than five innings per start. Like, these guys just aren't coming out early like we typically see Auburn able to do. And so part of me is like, can you do it against them a second and a third time? Or can you get them out of the game? And I don't necessarily know if they're going to be able. I guess that's my big question about Auburn's offense here is, you know, there's been times they haven't really figured out a starter, but they get his pitch up and get him out of the game. Can you replicate that pattern against a Ruger Rojas, a Dylan Volantis, who are fantastic strikeout guys? They're striking out, you know, Volantis has 40 and 29 in the third innings. Rojas has like 50 and he's striking out almost two guys an inning. Can you do that? I don't know.
Well, something to note, because this is, you know, you're looking at full season stats and this is SEC week number two. Those stats are going to be preloaded by your pre-conference schedule.
True.
This is not to demean Rojas at all, but his starts went like this in non-conference play. Okay. Non-conference starts, 5 innings, 9 Ks, 6 innings, 10 Ks, 5 innings, 11 Ks, 6 innings, 12. Okay. 5, 9, 6, 10, 5, 11, 6, 12. Last week, 4 1/3. 3 runs on 6 hits, half of his earned runs, over a third of his hits allowed this year. Mm-hmm. He still had 8 strikeouts.
Yeah.
He still almost got 2 strikeouts an inning, but it changes a little bit when you get into conference play.
The and quality Auburn's of had, who you face. Yeah.
Auburn's had more success against right-handed starters than it has against left-handed starters. And so, if he's able to put together like 6 innings and 11 strikeouts, I'll be a little surprised if that's what he does tonight.
Yeah, for context, those of you who haven't looked at the schedule, that was against Ole Miss last week, and that was at home. So he was in his own ballpark, and he did that. The teams he's faced this year, he's faced UC Davis, he's faced Michigan State, He started game one in Houston in the Bruce Bolt College Classic against Coastal Carolina, which, you know, I mean, that's a good lineup. He held them to one hit, 11 strikeouts across five innings. But then it was USC upstate and then Ole Miss, to your point. The one time he faced a conference opponent, he's faced decent schools, but a conference opponent, he struggled. And we saw Coastal last year. We know the strength of that Coastal team has been their arms, you know, and they did lose some of their best hitters to the MLB draft. So maybe not the same caliber of the team that Auburn lost to last year. I do think it is. That's to me that's going to be the biggest matchup of the weekend to me, is seeing what Auburn's offense is able to get done.
Yeah.
You, like you said, you've got multiple ways to get there. Mm-hmm. It's just, are they able to find one of those to get there? We've seen Auburn face some of the best starters in baseball, in college baseball, in the last couple of years, and maybe not do much against them, but get them out of the game and get the backups. I remember Paul Skeens came in here on a Friday night. He threw like seven innings, but Auburn still won. If I remember, I think they still won the game because they got to the bullpen after he left. So
yeah,
multiple ways to do it. We've seen him do it a lot of different ways this year. Is it going to happen?
Yeah, it's a race is what it is. It's a race. How early can you get him out of the game? And they're going to be thinking the same thing about Marciano tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Even though Auburn's bullpen has been good, Texas bullpen has been good, but they're not what the starters have been. So, yeah, can you, you know, if in the first inning, does he throw 11 pitches and you're retired in order? Or does he throw 22 pitches and you get a couple hits, even if you don't score? Do you send seven to the plate and you get 22 pitches in him? You know what?
Can you
be at 60 pitches in the third or fourth inning?
Mm-hmm.
He's going to stretch him out. Like, he's going to go as long as you're now at the point in the year. You're your sixth weekend of the year. You're mid-season. You're in the mid-season third.
Yeah.
So you're going to pitch however long you can go. We're going to get the maximum out of Riojas and Marciano in the opener, and the other two games will be the same way. So, you know, can you do enough damage to get him out of the game early? That's the race.
That is the race. I do think about this bullpen. You have, they've got a trio of guys that have all made five or more appearances and not yet given up a run this season. And then they've got, you know, a couple more that, you know, Brett Crossland, 7 appearances, 6 2/3. He's given up one hit and one walk. Yep. Like, just a lot of guys, it has been very difficult to get things against their bullpen. And that's with them taking Dylan Volantis, last year's closer, and moving him into the rotation.
Yeah. Now, it is interesting that they've spread out the saves this year. They do not have the surefire closer. They have four different guys with at least one save. And they blew a save opportunity against Ole Miss last week in the opener of that series. Their team earned run average, this is like, it's 2.67, which is already elite. Yeah, thank you. But if you note their stats, they have a guy named Cade Bing, and I'm not trying to call him out for this, but I'm going to make the point. He's made one appearance. In that appearance, he did not retire a batter. Gave up three runs in zero innings. Okay.
Yep.
If you take away his one appearance, everybody else has at least four, and most everybody else has at least five. But if you take away the guy who has just the one appearance, their team ERA shrinks to 2.51.
Yeah.
So if they score three runs, Lindsay, it's enough. On average, if they score three, it's enough.
And so, we haven't faced a bullpen that good all year. Who's done that? I mean, our pitching staff. Now, our pitching staff on the whole, 2.26 ERA. And we have a situation like that. Marcel Kulik got into one game. You know, he allowed two runs, didn't record an out. So we're kind of in a similar boat. Same time, I don't think Texas has faced that. Although we are doing this a little bit differently because we have had some injuries and we do have, you know, one of our key bullpen arms down. And so everybody else for the most part has performed, but you kind of have to figure out now who's going to step up to replace and take over as that first guy out of the pen on a Friday night. And that's the thing that we got to see how they adjust and what they do. But I feel like Auburn is also in that situation of, you know, a lot of our saves went to Garrett Brewer. He's got, I think, 3 of the 4, and Ryan Hetzler has the last one. It's like, okay, is Hetzler the first man up? Does somebody else that you've seen pitch that's looked good, you know, mm-hmm. Drew Whalen, maybe, is he somebody you go to? What's the plan there? And I just don't necessarily know if we have the two guys figured out, because it was a two-man show before. It was Brewer and Hetzler. Mm-hmm. It's now Hetzler and who?
Yeah, I mean, it could still be. Are you're saying it was Whalen and then Brewer?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. Whalen and Brewer. Sorry, yeah. I said.
Because I still think Hetzler and Brewer are your guys that are closing out. Yeah, I'm interested to see is freshman LJ Cormier ready to step into that spot, or do you go to Chatterton, or do you need to move? Like, can you come back to Chatterton on Friday? Surely you can. After his two innings on Tuesday, or do you need to reserve him for Saturday, Sunday? It's all in how the thing plays out. Yeah. Auburn's team ERA, by the way, if you take out Kulik's outing, goes to 2.16.
Not bad.
So two runs is almost enough.
Yeah.
Two's almost enough. That's why base running is important. That's why defense is important. Taking extra bases, not getting thrown out on the base paths. There's 100 different keys when you have teams that have pitched the way these teams have pitched on the front end and in the back end.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I have a thought on Cormier and the way they've used him, and then we'll get more into this matchup. We'll do that next right here on the Barn Baseball Show. Welcome back to the Barn Baseball Show. Lindsey Crosby, Brad Law. Talking about LJ Cormier, they did a lot of work early in the season with him to use him in low leverage situations. 17-2 game against Youngstown State. 8-0 versus Cincinnati, the wrong way, right? 10-6 against Louisville. 12-3 against Nebraska. And then, I feel like some of that was, we want you to get comfortable. Look at the last two times he's gone out there. He has 3 mm-hmm. almost perfect innings across his last two outings. The only blemish is 1 walk against Georgia Tech. He struck out 5 of the, I think it's, was it 10? He's faced 10 batters, and he struck out 5 of them in the last two. I feel like that's the... we're getting him comfortable so that he can step into a larger role in conference play. That was the plan.
Yeah.
And from the outside, it looks like it worked, although we'll see it in a close game for the first time probably this weekend.
Especially if you can get him in with like a 2-0 lead. Like if you can get him in a leverage situation where he's already pitching with downhill, you know, with some leverage. He's got the fit. Like, he just looks so comfortable. He does not look like a guy who's had a half a dozen appearances as a true freshman. And that's understandable with his dad's major league history and, you know, the way he's grown up. He just, he knows he belongs. Doesn't believe he belongs. He knows that he belongs.
Yeah. I think that's kind of the big thing is I think a lot of us forget it's so much mental as it is just the stuff, right? You have to feel comfortable with what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, he can throw strikes, and we know Butch obviously cares about that. I think, you know, the fastball, he it's low 90s, right? But it's competitive. Yeah. He's got the pitchability that you need, and that gives him the chance to be successful. And I think that's going to have to be probably one of the first guys to step up, but there's so many guys who just haven't had a ton of opportunities. I think that's one of the things we just haven't, it feels weird. We haven't had a ton of high leverage situations to throw our relievers into in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. When you look at the Texas offense, I think what stands out to me is so many of them have been successful in the power department.
Mm-hmm.
The starting lineup, I feel like most of the guys in the starting lineup are, you know, they've got, what's it? They've got 5 guys with 5 or more home runs. They've got, you know, a couple of them with 6, 1 with 7. And then if you look at the bench, there's maybe three home runs from the entire rest of the roster.
Mm-hmm.
And so a situation where, like, there's things to like down there. Ashton Larson, you know, has a you know, batting average in the mid threes. Jaden Duplantier doesn't get a lot of starts, but he does. He is able to do a lot offensively. He's, you know, scored a bunch of runs, good base runner. But for the most part, like, it's the one through nine, and it's Aiden Robbins, it's Anthony Pack. They both have seven stolen bases. Adrian Rodriguez has six, but, like, Robbins also has six homers. It's just, that's kind of the boat that you're in. They all start. There's like seven guys who are in the lineup every day.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are solid hitters who can get on base, who can hit for power and can steal some bags. And I just think it's a big, big challenge for Chase Frelick this weekend to control that running game.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to run that much this weekend, if I'm perfectly honest. I don't know how much they ran against Ole Miss. A lot of times, and we see this, and you know this, you see teams run in non-conference play, but then you get into the league, and the time to home plate, it gets cut down, and the catcher's arms are better, and you see way difference. The split between non-conference and conference.
Yeah.
Is a ton. They might try early. I'll be a little surprised if they run a bunch.
I do think also having your first two starters for Auburn be lefties is a big part of that as well, because it's just inherently harder to do that because he's watching you the whole time. And so I haven't gone back to quantify this. Part of me wonders if Auburn starting off with two lefties every weekend means teams just kind of automatically deprioritize stolen base attempts.
Yeah.
And then I'd be curious to see the numbers for game threes to see if they pick it back up when Alex Petrovic's in the game. Right. Because you don't want to, if you decide that you want to steal, you're either going to be unsuccessful or you're going to have to really press at it to be good against the two lefties. I feel like a lot of teams probably just kind of throw that out the window a little bit against Auburn and, like, hey, dirt ball, we're going to go, but we're not going to sit there and just try to, you know, do it all the time with two lefties on the mound.
What's interesting is teams have attempted 17 stolen bases this year against Auburn, or against Chase Frelick, 17.
Yeah.
Let's see, against Steele, 2 for 3. So for the year, that's 15 for 20. Against Marciano, 1 for 2.
Yep.
Sanders, 4 for 4. Petrovic, 1 for 2. They've attempted fewer steals against Petro than they have Sanders. I bet a couple of those were Florida State. Probably. I bet some of those were Florida State in that first inning.
Yeah, I can see that. And I think some of that for Pet too is just his time to the plate. I mean, he's a pace of play enforcer. He's ready to get the ball in. He can, he has a quick move to the plate, and it just makes it tough to do it. So I've talked to Sonny about this, and I want to get your opinion on this too, but I feel like the defense, we talked about how the little things are going to matter this weekend. I feel like the defense, ever since Brandon McCrane went to shortstop and just became the starting shortstop, I feel like the defense has been, I'm not going to say much better than it had any right to be, but I think much better than we expected based on the early returns we saw and based off of Butch's admission that he's willing to sacrifice a little bit of defense for offense at the plate. But McCrane's looked fantastic. It's not been the cleanest. He has a couple errors, but I do think he's been really good at shortstop after he got comfortable with it that first weekend.
He had a couple errors at third base for sure. True. I don't know how
he had two at third and one at short. Okay. I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why if you put him at third and then Guevara at short, neither one of them looked like they were comfortable as the other way. It's amazing how that can be different. They're separated by just, you know, a few feet, but it makes a difference. Brandon looks very comfortable at short. He looked comfortable at second base, but he looks even more comfortable at short than he did at second. So,
that's
been, and that's why having Eric in there this weekend, hopefully he's he's on the injury report. He's not even listed. So he's good.
Butch told us yesterday that the expectation was that Eric would be back this weekend, but that Bristol would not.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's funny. Butch jokingly called Bristol a liar It's like he keeps telling us he's ready to go.
Yeah.
And he's clearly not. And so,
well, like, yeah, that's like, that's Bristol. He wants to play. He wants to be, how would you not want to be in there right now?
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
So, I get that.
Butch said he even texted them on the off day and was like, hey, coach, I feel great. I'm ready to go. And Butch is like, all right, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
But he told us he's probably going to be out this weekend just as a just to get him fully healthy and ready. And thankfully, you've got other pieces you can throw in. You know, you can throw in Chase, not Chase, sorry, Chris back to leadoff.
Yep.
We, you know, we saw that a lot. That's been successful. Different speed component, but that's been successful. Yeah. I think you're still in that scenario where you have an embarrassment of riches still because after Todd Clay's initial cold streak, he's picked it up since getting back in the lineup at third base. Mm-hmm. Ethan Bingaman's kind of solidified himself as your first baseman now. News on that.
Yeah. So Eddie Madrigal is listed as probable on the injury report. Bristol is listed as probable too.
Yeah.
But Madrigal becoming available again, does it help you beat Texas this weekend? I don't know. But I'd be shocked if we don't see him pinch hit.
And I was about to say, Butch told us that. Butch told us he's probably a pinch hitter. And if everything goes well, we could see him in the lineup as soon as Tuesday to play in the field. But he's probably just pinch hitting this weekend. I do wonder if they might try him at DH, though.
That's just what these coaches need. Someone else to have to decide where and how often and where in the lineup they go. My goodness gracious.
Yeah.
Well, and I hope he's not – like, he's not mid-season form. We know that.
No.
But – man, the praise he earned in the fall, early on, before the injury, he's you're going to love watching Eddie Madrigal.
I think that's my favorite part of this whole thing is like, oh, yeah, you kind of that's one of your, that's your top offensive transfer in this season. And you're just going to add him in SEC play. Like, you're just going to get him back, you know,
fresh.
Guy who hit 368 with an 1160 OPS last year. I mean, it was St. Mary's competition level and all that, but like he was a second team All-American, you know, 20 something home runs. And yeah, guess what? You're just going to add him to the roster in conference play. So that's hilarious to me. And I do, it makes me wonder, I feel like we've seen a little bit of a, I'm going to call it a deprioritization of getting Lucas Steele as the DH on the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
He still is Petro's personal catcher, right? But part of me wonders, like kind of the distribution of the playing time here, if they try to get Madrigal a DH day. I don't know if he will, or if he'll still just be a pinch hitter, but what a great problem to have. Yeah, it's hilarious. I love it. I think it's great.
And I know we're talking about Texas and kind of getting to the end of the show, but can I make this note too? Griffin Graves listed as out again this weekend, but he's getting closer. He did throw a bullpen, which means he's getting closer.
Yeah.
And if the original intent was for him to be a starter and he does get back, now you never want guys injured. I'm not trying to make that claim, but if a guy is injured and he comes back and now you have a starting SEC caliber lefty, healthy with no wear and tear. Like, let's just say that's early April. So now you got April, May, June with a guy whose cycle on the season is just getting started. He's probably in prime midseason form by the time June comes around, isn't he?
It's almost like making a midseason trade. Again, it's kind of the embarrassment of riches. This feels like it's the deepest lineup, deepest roster that Butch has ever had. And I feel like we've said that in multiple different years, and then they just keep stacking talent. I mean, he was in SEC play last year. He struck out 24 and 23 and a third innings. Eight of his 13 appearances were scoreless.
Yep.
And then now, you know, you're going to add this guy in midseason. And to your point, it's another like, hey, he's a lefty, which is already a little bit unusual in baseball compared to the prevalence of righties. And if he ends up being a starter, you could have a weekend rotation of all lefties, or he could, you know, it's just, if he piggybacks with somebody, he's a key man out of the pen. And it just, it blows my mind that we're at this point of the season and we don't really have any, knock on wood, any season ending injuries, right? We do have guys nicked up, but to go along with that, you're getting arguably two of your five best players, right? Maybe available mid-year.
It doesn't replace Drew Whalen, but it does help lessen the blow because it's a different piece that will be coming back eventually. Yeah. To your point about depth, Texas, and you mentioned this before, Texas has seven guys who have started all 20 games. You know how many Auburn has that have started all 20 games?
I'm going to guess probably just two. And I'm going to guess it is Bub.
Yep.
And I'm going to guess, because they keep DHing him or first basing him on Lucas Steele's catch days, probably Chase Frelick.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. Bub and Chase are the only two guys that have played in every game. And it's because now some of that's injury.
Yep.
But some, like
Chris Rimber would have.
Sure, Chris Rimber would have, no doubt. But some of it is also options. And so it comes down to three games this weekend. Yep. For this weekend. My favorite thing about this weekend is for both sides, okay, a lot to be gained if you win the series. Not a whole lot to be lost if you lose the series. Like, let's say Auburn sweeps Texas. Sweeps them. Texas still go do everything they want to do.
Auburn's RPI will jump to what? One? You'll go from two to one?
Yeah. It would have to. Yeah,
that's it.
Auburn would be the number one team in the country. Texas would fall to four. Seven or eight, nine.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe not even as much as I'm thinking. So,
yeah, I'm thinking probably like five.
And I think that's the way for both teams. So, like, you have a whole lot to gain. Not all that much to lose. It's like your weight when you go on a cruise. We got a lot to gain, not a whole lot to lose.
Oh, I have not heard that comparison, but that's a good one. All right. Speaking of three games, picks.
Yep.
If I wasn't going to pick a sweep against Missouri, I'm not going to pick a sweep here.
Okay.
But what I'm trying to figure out is this a 2-1 weekend or a 1-2 weekend? And I feel like because you're at home, I'm going to go with 2-1.
Yeah.
I don't know which game you would lose, but I'm going to go with 2-1.
I think Auburn sweeps.
Yo, look at Brad.
The problem. Now, listen, if this were a Texas show, if this were called The Horn instead of The Barn or whatever, I'd pick Texas to sweep, even on the road.
Yeah.
And the reason, or maybe I'd pick 2 out of 3. And the reason is, until I've seen the starting pitching falter,
you can't assume it's going to.
I can't pick a team to come in here and beat Auburn. Now, that's not likely. That's not what happens in most of these series. Like, the overwhelming majority of these series in league play are 2-1. But until I see somebody do it, I'm going to go 3.
I think that's the right way to look at this. Is just like the games that Auburn has lost, it wasn't the starting pitching.
No.
We knock on wood, other than I think one bad inning against Florida State, we've really not seen the starting pitching at all, even remotely get tested from a run scoring perspective. We've seen guys on base and them have to work out of stuff. We've never seen them actually do that. That's my dog.
Yeah.
All right. Bark. That'll do it for the dog. That'll do it for the Baseball Show. For Brad Law, I'm Lindsey Crosby. Thanks a lot.